With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey gang, Nat here. Favor to ask. We are up for an award. Yep. It took me a while to work out quite how the hell that happened. But we are. The Sports Podcast Awards, no less. We are nominated in, unsurprisingly, the NFL category for Best NFL Pod. How about that? How about that? So help us out, please, if you can. If you got, I reckon it takes about 45 seconds. That's my guess. So head on over to sportspodcastawards.com. You got to register your email and vote for us as your favorite NFL show. It's going to help us because, quite frankly, we like a bit of chest puffing. But also, if we win that award, we think we've got a better shot of getting Drew Lock, Joe Judge, maybe even Urban Meyer on the show next season. And that is our wish list for next season, as you all well know. So head on over to sportspodcastawards.com, sportspodcastawards.com. And vote for the show. I appreciate it. Hello, and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show. Gang, I don't need a big intro. We don't need any fanfare. I'm Mike Carlson, and the best weekend of playoff football I can remember. Let's put them together. Iron Mike, well, as our friend OT would say, we have seen some pretty wild rides in our time. Where the hell does that Bills Chiefs game rank in terms of all-time stormers?
Well, it's up there with the best. I mean, you know, and you think about that, was it Baltimore, Kansas City, or the Saints, Kansas City? Sorry, San Francisco a couple of years ago. And You think of the Patriots coming back against Atlanta, you know, that finish. This had a bit of everything in it. But I think on top of the Tampa Rams game, it was probably the best doubleheader we've ever seen.
Right. It's a great point on the Rams-Bucks game because it's a bit like a support act absolutely storming it. and then Springsteen to the E Street come on and you just blow everybody.
Yeah, what's gonna beat this game, you know?
Right.
And although they didn't have the benefit of having Sean Hockley as the referee. John Hussey was taking a very laissez-faire kind of attitude toward the game. There were only three penalties, I think, the whole game, four maybe. And at one point, like Mahomes was running out of bounds and got clocked when he was out of bounds. And Hussey was right there and watched it. And then he picked up Mahomes and sort of patted him on the back.
Off we go. Let's get on with it.
So, yeah. And, you know, I was just thinking...
Hockley quote, because I thought I know you're gonna get against that, you'll love this. So this is after the game, and this of course is the unsportsmanlike conduct flag on Brady, which is Brady's never had one in his career, by the way. And they asked him why. This is what Hockley said. Why did Hockley throw the flag on Brady? He got in my face in an aggressive manner and used abusive language. Which, quite frankly, Mike, is how Ollie treats us before pretty much every
recording,
true. Right?
That's true. And no one throws a flag on him. I've got to get my pearls and start clutching them. When you watch that play again, the weird thing is he was behind Brady. He's on the right side, you know, as Brady's throwing and Brady's turned to his left. But Larry Killens, who's the umpire, literally is 3 feet away from Brady, looking him in the face. And he's crouched with his hands on his knees. And Von Miller comes in and gives him the helmet to helmet. And you see it. And Brady comes back. And for some reason, Brady turns around to Hockley. And after they're jawing for a couple of seconds, Killens comes into the picture and he's shouting. And you can't see what he's shouting. There's no microphone on it, but he is shouting. I think that Hockley might have been flagging Killens. for taunting the referee for missing the call. But it was like, I didn't see any here. It's like, he's the guy who saw it. And it's like, I didn't see anything. And it was, I mean, those, there were 45 yards of unsportsmanlike penalties, none of which should have been called.
The helmet,
I mean, I understand why he called Sue, because Sue's pointing the finger and Stafford's doing a good job acting.
I still think it was like
Stafford literally kicked him in the balls.
Yeah. It was Beckham. It was Beckham-esque. It was Beckham-esque.
Yeah, exactly. It was, he did one of those pro wrestler things where you kick out of the pin, and then he extended the feet a little bit after he'd done that.
You know, a play or two later, or it must be the next play, when we see Brady's bleeding and he's pointing to Hercules saying, "Look, I'm bleeding. Yeah. Did he cut himself WWE style?
That's what, you know, they really missed that, you know, because I was waiting for Collinsworth to say, you know, he's busted open. Yeah. Von Miller's busted him open.
It's Antonio Brown. There you go.
So that was just kind of. Yeah, and then Hockley trying to explain the call on the Mike Evans, Eric Weddle. Weddle, as far as I can see, and I watched the whole game, Weddle made two plays in that game, both of which were late hits, and one of which got called. Did you know, they're both late hits on defenseless receivers.
After Weddle hit him, Jalen Ramsey's response was just incredible. Go look that up again, how Ramsey reacts to that. We have got Mike.
Oh, Ramsey's got another great one, too. You know, I'm taking over on Mike Evans now, Mike Evans punks him out.
Yeah, really did. And I love Jalen Ramsey. You know I do, but Evans owned him on that one. We've got a lot of questions from the mailbag, Mike. That probably won't surprise you at all. So we're going to...
Let's get into it so we don't skip them all at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to weave him in to the chat, because there's so much to get into, my God. So let's start with Bills Chiefs, right? The numbers are just ridiculous. Gabe Davis, 4 touchdown receptions in a single game. That's a playoff first. 3 go-ahead touchdowns in the final 2 minutes, a playoff first. There were effectively 4 successfully completed 2-minute drills in 1 2-minute drill.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. I mean, the best tweet I saw, and I'm trying to remember who put it up, but you know, Dallas fans are looking and asking how come the Chiefs can kick a field goal in 13 seconds and Dallas can't get a playoff. Was it Mike Tenier?
No, it was Henry Hodgson, Handsome Hank. It was Henry.
Henry, that's right. It was Henry. Yeah. Because I said to him, best tweet of the day, Hank.
Yeah.
And Dallas can't even get a playoff in 13 seconds. Now, a lot of people did write in, and if I'm anticipating somebody that you had on the list, I apologize. But, you know, asking, shouldn't they have kicked it into the field, you know, not kicked it through the end zone?
So let's break through that last 13 seconds then. So how on earth did the Bills let Mahomes and co. back in to the game with 13 seconds remaining? So let's start with that. And the kickoff, first of all, the rationale.
To me, the kickoff's the key thing, or the first key thing. Most teams have worked, and you can remember Gostkowski was a master at it for the Patriots, which is, I think, why he lingered on for a year or two when his kicking was no longer, it's kind of like at the top level, but it sunk a level down, because he could put a kickoff inside the 5, but outside the goal line. Right. Pretty regularly.
On a dime.
And that's what you want ideally in that situation, because, you know, especially if they don't have Cordarrelle Patterson or Debo, you know, returning the kickoff, you've got to figure your coverage unit is going to be able to keep him around the 25 or less if he fields the kick. Mm. But the clock starts once he fields the kick. Mm-hmm. If no one touches the ball in the kickoff, the clock never starts. So if you kick it through the end zone, you don't take any time off the clock. So let's assume that you kick it short, even if you squib it deep, they get the ball maybe at the 30, say, you know, instead of the 25. But you've taken 4 or 5 seconds off the clock. So now they've got 9 seconds to work with instead of 13. That's one play gone.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs, you know, Andy was a master of clock management for the first time I can remember. And he hadn't used any of his timeouts, none of those stupid, you know, let's take a timeout to see what they're going to do kind of things. So he had 3 timeouts, so they could do whatever they wanted play calling wise, which they did. And for some reason, and we saw a similar thing with Tampa and the Rams at the end of the game, where, you know, for some reason they decided to blitz. They sent the extra rusher, I think, and I think Romo was all over that. They sent 4, Because four had been very sick. Four is their normal rush and had been very successful for them. But they left a real soft spot in the middle of the field. Mm. And they were defending the sideline, even though the middle of the field was there. When I say defending the sideline, what it means is that your safeties are wider so that they can come up on the sideline play and not let it go for yardage. And so, you know, it was a beautiful play with Hill running that cross. Mm. And they didn't play it well. And then to leave Kelsey, be sitting there in the middle with Kelsey with no one on him on the second.
Kelsey explained that. Just I want to get to that in a moment. Just to jump back to the play before, right, the Hill play, because they were playing a too deep safety look, weren't they? Did you get a sense that the Bills were given the way, and that's no surprise, maybe given the 2 minutes that had immediately occurred before this, but a lot of people criticizing, why were they playing so conservatively when it's a field goal to tie? Yeah. Do you think they thought there was a very real danger that Chiefs were going to burn them and win the game?
And I think that's a very good point, because the Bills play, you know, they play too deep most of the time. They're basically Ron Rivera, that shell defense. And that means they dare you to beat them by coming up the field in increments, expecting that sooner or later they will make a play or you will make a mistake or both. And that's the way they play. And they're the best defense in the league, statistically speaking. So you can't really argue with that. But in this situation, because they were laying deep instead of keeping the situation in mind, as Hill came across, and I think Romo made the point very well, that what you don't want to do is let him get across your front when you're the corner in coverage, and your help was too deep, as you just said, you know, because the safeties were deeper, there wasn't anyone there to come up. And normally you're still okay because they're the safety zone. That's why they're called safeties. So the crosser's not going to kill you, but of course it's Tyreek Hill. Mm. And he'll just outran the safety who should have made the play there. He just ran right by him, just by him, in front of him, and got the extra yards and out of bounds.
The Kelsey play.
And then what Kelsey explained, he can probably explain it better than I can.
Yeah, this is this is what he said. Mahomes, he's talking about. I told him I'm probably not going to run the route that's called, and I was going to run to the open area. And in his cadence, in Mahomes' cadence, he was yelling to me, do it, do it. So Kelsey said, I'm not going to run what I'm told. I'm just going to find the open space and I'll find me there, basically.
We call that hole in the zone. That was the term. I think when the guys started doing the stats on every play, you know, like with charting every play, a pass would be complete to a hole in the zone. and that's, you know, is you watch Gronk and, you know, he'll just run out there. And then as the quarterback's going, he'll drift, you know, into that spot because the defenders are generally watching. When you're playing a zone, you're watching what's in front of you. Right. So you're looking at the quarterback. It's the advantage of playing a zone when you're playing a mobile quarterback, because you can keep your eyes on him. Where you're playing man to man, you have to keep, you know, you're chasing all the time. So, so Kelsey found that spot and they were in field goal range, and Harrison Butkus, the toughest kicker in football.
the comeback kid after, you know, didn't, what had gone down. You know,
and that's the other thing that people are arguing about this game incessantly. But let's remember, if Harrison Butkus doesn't miss a field goal that he usually makes and doesn't miss an extra point, we don't go to overtime.
Right. Well, right. And one of a number of kickers, hey, kick a love this weekend that held another. We'll get into that. On the Kelsey and Hill show, because you and I over the season, and I think it's fair to say that we were certainly amongst the calmer, let's reserve judgment, let's not get carried away with the Chiefs are finished, which was flying everywhere for a lot of the season. However, we had noted demonstrably their offense had sputtered for the first half of the season. And one of the questions we asked at the time was, can a team built like this survive deep into the playoffs with a reliance on a couple of big playmakers? And I know it's not as simple as that, but for the record, Kelsey and Hill, 19 catches, 246 yards, two touchdowns, and the clutch plays of the game as far as the Chiefs offense was concerned.
Yeah. What's going on here is what we said all season. There are two things that we said basically all season, I think. One is any game you're picking Green Bay, you're basically picking Aaron Rodgers. You know, it's how much can he do to carry that team on his shoulders? Two, with Kansas City, they will eventually come right, because what happened at the beginning of the season was everybody watched the Super Bowl and figured, okay, now we know how we can stop Kansas City. And it took them a little while to adjust to that, you know, to the idea that everyone was going to play them too deep, basically, one way or another, you know, or going to, they weren't going to play one high or even like cover three. And also their defense was malfunctioning. And two things happened, you know, around the same time. Andy Reid adjusted by running more, by getting the running backs more involved in the game. Not many teams have Lavonte David and Devin White, who can play in the middle and get all the way to the sidelines to stop swing passes as they happen. Strange enough, the Bills are one of them, or at least a half of them. Milano can do that. Edmonds is fast enough to do it, but he's not always kind of in the right position to do it. He doesn't read plays as well as White or David do. And of course they have two great safeties. You know, they have a really strong pair of safeties back there. Buffalo does. But the other thing that happened was the defense, especially after they picked up Melvin Ingram and they moved Chris Jones back to tackle, their defense became much better. And Belton, the rookie linebacker, integrated himself much better. So that with him and Gay in there, they could stop the run a whole lot better. And they weren't losing that much to the pass, because they were only playing two linebackers. And then they had Hitchens there too, you know, to do pass coverage as well. So the defense got better, which means they didn't need as many points. And the offense got better, and they were controlling the ball more. You know, and Niang went down. That offensive line was a real machine. Wiley hasn't played that badly since replacing him at right tackle. But, you know, Niang went down. Remmers is down as well, who would have been the first right tackle in there. And you remember Remmers was playing left tackle in the Super Bowl last year. So I thought all that sort of came together at the right time. And the only bit of questionable coaching, I think, was when they just after I had tweeted, you know, after I think it was Tyreek Hill's big play in regulation. And I said, this is what you do. You put the ball, you give the ball to your playmakers and you watch them make plays. And then they put Bell in at tailback, you know, to run one of those. He was the belldozer, you know, in college, quarterback, option quarterback. And they put him in at tailback. And you could almost see Mahomes kind of standing there out at wide receiver going like, why am I here? You know, why am I not playing quarterback?
I don't agree with this.
I could, that was the one I just couldn't figure out. But otherwise, they called a pretty good game. They got good performance from Clyde Edwards-Helaire and McKinnon, neither of whom were playing at, you know, early in the season,
right?
For injury and other reasons. So, you know, I just thought it was difference. And, you know, and I think as well, when Gabriel Davis made Mike Hughes fall over, any receiver, you know, that's like, let's go Monday morning and watch tape. Let's just play that 150 times.
That is the NFL equivalent of a nut mugging a keeper. And believe me, that's happened to me plenty of times, I can tell you, on the wrong end of that. Right. Speaking of the mailbag, because there are a ton. So, like I said, I'm going to weave it through in a few in, I should say. And on that point of defense, Bills, one of the best defenses in the NFL. The Chiefs are much improved defense as the season has gone on, as you've identified, Mike. So Ryan Davis asks, obviously, Bills Chiefs are classic, but would the two defenses stepping up have raised it even further? So how much of this was on shortcomings on the night with the two defenses?
Well, you know, 78 points scored. Well, admittedly, 24 of those were in the last 2 minutes of the game, and then another six were in
overtime, right?
In the overtime, so that's 30 of the points were scored, you know, after the 2 minute warning. I think what happened to an extent was the defense is tired.
Yeah,
the Chiefs' defense is shorthanded in the secondary and was even more so when Tyrann Mathieu, and you can't underestimate his importance to that, because he's one of those hybrid guys we've talked about during the season, who can, you know, basically do the jobs of both a safety and a linebacker, occasionally a slot corner as well. But they depend a lot on his ability to to read the plates to know which of those jobs he's filling at that time. And so when he went out and Sorensen comes in, it weakens them in a number of ways, you know, particularly in pass coverage, which is part of the reason why Gabriel Davis is the guy who had the big play. They kept Stephon Diggs pretty well controlled.
Check. Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Diggs only caught short passes. You know, he had one late in the game. But that did leave Davis basically man covered, and he ate that up, and give Allen credit for having the faith in him to sort of, because the other thing that happens is that both Allen's and Mahomes, you can defend them well and you still lose the play.
Yes.
Good example, 4th and 13 that Allen made in the last 2 minutes. I mean, he was twice he should have been tackled. As he was scrambling around. But when he's scrambling around like that, it tires your defense out more, obviously, for the next play. But he has more time to get a receiver on a broken play. So you can do everything right, and then all of a sudden it's a scramble drill. And if you miss the first step, you can be beaten. So a lot of it is down to that. And because of this, they're not unique characteristics, but you know that unique ability of these quarterbacks to escape pressure. I thought they did a great job in the second half of containing Allen as a runner.
Yeah. And the running game full stop. I mean, Singletary had he averaged 2.6 a carry. The much maligned Chiefs run defense held firm pretty well.
Against Josh Allen, again, it's no secret, is you want to hold him in the pocket. You don't want to let him run. The idea that they switched in the last month of the season to a lot of designed runs, a lot of sort of single wing football, made it harder to do that. Because there was a play late in the game where Kenny Clark got beaten around left tackle by Allen, and Clark was there, but he needed to take a step over the line. This is one of the things if you've ever played against a single wing team, which I have, they used to teach you, you know, is to set the edge. You can't set the edge at the line of scrimmage or the point of attack. Have to take a step into the backfield, and Clark didn't do that, and Allen went around him. You know, he just had that extra side, because you don't do that because you don't want to be beaten to the inside if he's going to take that inside route. But in the old single wing, they would tell you if you were at the end to push everything in. Just don't let him get outside you. Don't make the tackle. Just don't let him get outside you. Someone else will come up and make the tackle. I was good at that because I didn't have to make the tackle.
Yeah, I bet you were. Here's another one from Paul Murphy. Thanks for the question, Paul. At the NC Show, incidentally, is how you get in touch with the show. Speaking of Josh Allen, were Josh Allen's performances, asked Paul, in the last two games, the greatest ever by a quarterback in the history of the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, he played really well, no question about it. And you know, the question I think ongoing is whether he can continue to carry the Buffalo team.
Ooh.
You know, if they're going to use him in that kind of single wing manner. Nobody's indestructible, and you know, and you're some people will say, well, if you're not standing in the pocket taking hits, you're actually less likely to get injured, but really running back get injured so much because there's so much strain on your legs while you're running. It's not necessarily the fact that you're being tackled, but it's that you're always twisting your knee ligaments and your ankle, you know, your ankle ligaments as you're going. So that's just the price you pay. You know, look at so you look at like Lamar Jackson, you know, being hurt this year. And it's interesting to me because Greg Roman, who's the offensive coordinator, he had a quarterback just like this when he and Harbaugh's brother, Jim, were in San Francisco, and his name was Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. And he had the same strengths and limitations that Jackson. I think Jackson's probably a better all-around runner and a slightly better passer maybe. But unless you can get guys like that to be able to execute the pass game when you have to, when the run game's not there, and you can, you know, and also to get the defense's concentration off the run game, then you're going to, oh God, then you're going to, unless you can do and get, and get the defense's concentration off the run game, then, you know, then it's always going to be a difficult proposition.
There is another question I want to get into, and then we've got to talk overtime, because actually quite a few of the mailbag, unsurprisingly, relating to overtime. And as you suggested a bit earlier on, Mike, there is outrage across the board at the overtime rules have to be changed. I know you have a strong opinion on that, but before we get into that overtime conundrum, Abbas has got in touch, and appreciate this as well, Abbas. After back-to-back losses, I think this is a great point, after back-to-back losses to the Chiefs in the playoffs, is there a possibility that we could see a Bills hangover next season and they go down the Seattle route where they just don't recover? It was a really important point. A lot of people showed that footage of, or the footage was doing the rounds anyway, of Stephon Diggs after last year's defeat, the only Bill on the field standing, watching the Chiefs, and this year, the manner of that defeat. It is an incredibly difficult thing to bounce back from. So do you think there is anything in the hangover argument that people chuck around after Super Bowls are lost, that the Bills, so close 2 years in a row, are going to find it hard to motivate themselves a third time?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think they may well lose their offensive coordinator. They may well lose a couple of key players. And that's sort of a bigger worry, I think, for them, is how they may lose their defensive coordinator too, for that matter. You know, Leslie Frazier could get a job. There's that, you know, and successful teams tend to lose players out of contract because other teams will overvalue them, and, you know, in terms of the market that their own team can afford.
Right.
But, you know, I just think they're too talented, you know, and the talent is on both sides of the ball. It's been built fairly carefully, and really the least talented unit on the team coming into the season and probably through the season too would be the offensive line, and they held up pretty well, you know, in the playoffs, and even in the loss to the Chiefs, and they've got a difficult job with Josh Allen back there. I don't think that's really a factor. I think Romo said at one point they had to, you know, first get past the hex of the Patriots in order to win the division.
Yeah,
they've done that 2 years in a row now. Now they just have to learn to get past Kansas City. You know, a better season to get that home game in Buffalo would be the first step.
Right.
I think that's the first way you get past the Chiefs.
It's a great point. I don't think many have made, actually. Yeah, I think that did have significant bearing, the way that Arrowhead was rocking at the end there. Okay, let's talk overtime. Let's get into that, because everyone is saying, well, not everyone. Most people are saying, I think they are. I think most people are saying that the rules need to be changed. Pretty much every single editorial I've read this morning today has referenced it, and at the very least has said, this could well mean in the offseason the NFL are going to take a look at the overtime rules and change it. Now, I know your position on this, you're going to share it with our listeners, of course, Mike. Let me frame the argument, though. People are saying it isn't fair on the Bills because after a game like that, they should have an equal shot at the end zone. It shouldn't be down to a coin flip. Now, of course, the overtime rules changed a handful of years ago from
2010.
Oh, God, is it that long? Okay.
And so 2012, I think, for the regular season as well.
So it was the coin flip, next score wins, right? Which was ridiculous.
Before that, it was sudden death. Yeah.
Yeah. So those critical of the current rules think that both teams should be given a shot to hit the end zone. Your argument, if I understand it correctly, Mike, is that everybody is emphasizing offense here. The Bills' defense had a shot to stop them. So therefore it's fair that it's an over.
Yeah, I mean,
over focus on offense.
Everybody usually says it's unfair that they lose without having a chance. Well, they had a chance was to stop the Chiefs from scoring a touchdown. And I think that the current rule, which was put in kind of as a compromise, was a very good compromise. You know, they didn't want to lose the feeling of sudden death, you know, where you have to play for the instant, you know, not sort of tactically. So they kept sudden death, but it was too easy to win sudden death by field goal because kickers have gotten so good that you could take the kickoff. You know, if you returned it to the 40, you were basically one first down away from kicking the winning field goal. So they said, okay, it's sudden death if you score a touchdown. If you do anything else, the other team gets a possession. to equal or better you. And I think that works really well, because there is a problem with a two possession overtime, which is what we saw in NFL Europe for a while. And I can remember the first time it was ever done was up in Scotland. With a two possession overtime, the team that wins the toss elects to receive, unless you're Scotland with Gene Dahlquist coaching you, and then you kick off, which just shocked everybody. But the reason that you kick off instead of receiving is that you then know what you need to do. Mm-hmm. If the other team doesn't score, you can play it like a normal game, go down for a field goal if right. you want. You'd if they score a field goal, you know you need a touchdown. If they score a touchdown, you know you need a touchdown. But a field goal will keep the game going. A touchdown will keep the game going.
Right.
But your advantage is you've got four downs to do it. Every series you have after that is a four down series, mm-hmm. because you have no alternative. If they score a touchdown, you've got four downs starting from the kickoff.
Yeah.
On each one. That to me is pretty unfair.
It's a big advantage. It's a great point.
It's a huge advantage. And I went back and tried to find, all I could get was through 2019. So I don't know about the last two seasons, but through 2019, from the time that the rule changed, you had 118 games that went to overtime. Mm-hmm. And 59 of them, exactly half, were won by the team that won the coin toss. Okay. But 44% were won by the team that lost the toss, and 6% ended in ties. You know, I think that's three games overall, or six games, whatever it was. But only 39% were won on the first possession by the team that won the coin toss.
39, so, interesting.
Yeah, so that basically, if you lose the coin toss but stop the other team from scoring, from getting a touchdown,
likely
you actually have a better chance of winning from point on.
But okay,
and I just think it works because people say, "Oh, you've got to give them, they've got to give them a chance to score." But why? You know, I don't understand. It's like saying that a boxer was knocked down in the eighth round. You know, you have to give him a chance to finish the other two rounds.
Sure, I get that.
I remember a guy asking me after the NBA finals, I think it was on Sky, well, what do they do with the other three games? how do they play the other three games? I said, no, they don't play the other three games. It's not like a tour or a test match. When it's over, it's over.
Oh, God, how painful it is. But,
I understand people are immature now. They've got the attention span of gnats. They think everything should be like basketball.
Steady on.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean that.
I get it. Some really good points, Mike.
They want everything to be like basketball. Lots of points, lots of scoring. Everybody gets another chance, a participation trophy for everyone. It's all offense. We have to see the quarterbacks. You know, Josh Allen didn't get to take the field. His parents are going to be really upset. We had the same argument when the Chiefs lost to the Patriots in the division game.
Yeah, it broke.
It was the AFC championship game.
Yeah, it broke.
When Brady marched them down in the overtime and they won. And I made the same argument there. You want to win, stop them.
Yeah, but
Buffalo. You're the best defense in the league. You're the number one ranked defense in the league. But boo hoo, we didn't get a chance to play offense.
My God, is this on?
Do you want to say something?
The rest of the show. Jesus, would that be okay? some really valid points, but the one side of it I don't agree with, and it's really interesting hearing the stats as well. And I think you make a really, really key point on the coin toss and the electing to kick or receive and the edge that gives you. Defense, and as was evidenced from the last 2 minutes of last night, they were so knackered, so tired after that I don't feel it's necessarily.
So let's make them play another series. Let's make them play an extra series after you score, because you're so tired. I mean, yeah, you either care about them being tired or you don't. You know, it's not.
I don't think
why not play 7-on-7? Just play Skelly drills.
You know, some good suggestions coming from our listeners, Mike. So
no contact.
suggests have one drive each if the scores are still tied, then a kickoff contest between the kickers.
Right. Yeah. This is the soccer. Yeah. Yeah. Basketball's not bad enough. We're going to make it like soccer. I mean, you can't believe the shock I had when I first came to Britain and I watched my first overtime game, extra time, and they scored. I said, oh, great. They won. Someone looked at me and said, no.
No, it's still good.
I said, what? No, they've got to play. They've got to change sides and play another 15 minutes. I said, what? The game's over. No, it's not over. And then it ended in a draw and they had a replay the next week in Leeds. I think that's what they should do with the NFL playoffs. If it ends in a tie, they shouldn't play overtime. They should have a replay in Leeds.
Only in Leeds. That's if the float will fly over to Leeds. I was actually thought you were being serious for a few seconds about a replay. I was starting to consider the idea. I quite like the idea of a replay.
Yeah, we can have a field goal shootout. You know, the kickers kick from the 40 and then the 45 and the 50 until, you know, one of them misses.
I quite like that. I wonder if we'll ever see some kind of the equivalent of a penalty shootout at some point in decades.
Why would we want to?
I'm not saying we'd want to. I wonder if we would see it though. Well, for the reasons you've just said, the kind of
probably because the world is going so stupid now that it's probably the next thing along. You know,
that's why.
Do I sound like a crotchety old man?
You never do. Hey, we haven't even got into officiating, particularly the quantum realm yet. So God,
I've burned myself out this season on the officiating.
We'll have to rest you up in the offseason.
Every year gets worse, you know, and the reason it gets worse is they try to address it and they address it by making it more complicated and more subjective. So it has to get worse. You know, they ensure that it will get worse the following season.
I'm going to write to the NFL and say, one of the most beloved broadcasters in this country, we've been covering the game for so many,
the NFL.
He would love nothing more than a 2-week secondment to hang out.
The competition committee.
Yeah, with the competition committee. And also if you could squeeze in a 24-hour visit to the Fox Command Center as well, so he could just sit and observe. He'd love that. He'd really, really
during the US elections. Yeah, me and Mike Pereira drinking Tito's. That's kind of my dream, you know. I'd say, Mike, how come if you're a lineman, you can move up and down and you can wave your arms around and you can never really get set. And the other team, if they move, gets called for encroachment.
I bet you
it used to be the other way around. It used to be the other way around. If you're an offensive lineman, you couldn't move a muscle.
We are going to get onto other games now because we're already 40 minutes and change into this, Carlson.
Yeah, let's go.
We're on one game at the moment, so we're flying here. So actually, one of our listeners did suggest there's no way we're going to get this into 1 hour. And you were spot on, whoever you are.
That's true. Jesse Bates was one of my players of the weekend.
I think he's
just so good. I've been saying that for 2 years now.
I couldn't agree more. And you are absolutely someone who has had him on our radar for a long time. And he was absolutely brilliant overall, because so much emphasis is on Burrow, obviously McPherson with his clutch kick.
Rookie of the year. Forget Jamar Chase.
Did you hear what Evan McPherson said? When he was warming up for the walk-off game-winning kick, he was warming up, took a couple of practice swings on the sideline and said to Brandon Allen, the Bengals quarterback, just took a couple of kicks, sized him up, just apparently said to Allen, yeah, we're going to the AFC Championship, and then went on and kicked the winning field goal.
Yeah, I mean, he's amazing. He had that game where he kicked three over 50 yards, you know, when they beat, was it Kansas City? Was that the Kansas City game? Or one of the games. He's money. I mean, Romo had this great quote about Butker. Justin Tucker's, you know, far and away the best kicker in the league, but Butker's right behind him. And I think it was Aaron Schatz at Football Insider said, if he's far and away the best kicker, how can anyone be right behind him?
Right, pedantic much.
I love pedantry though. Is now, you know, this year at least has to be one of the two or three best kickers in the league.
It does definitely in there and representative of this culture at the Bengals, which I think gives them a puncher's chance against the Chiefs, right? Burrow, Chase, McPherson, this young, fearless. I mean, to be
you know, they beat the Chiefs.
Yeah, they smashed
the Chiefs. They beat the Chiefs earlier a couple of weeks ago. But I mean, they really got the benefit of a lot of bad calls. Questionable calls, a lot of borderline calls that all went against the Chiefs on pass plays. Yeah. But this is going to be the question, you know, if you look at what the Buffalo receivers did to the Chiefs, then Ja'Marr Chase can do that as well, you know, and that's not to put down T. Higgins or Boyd, but teams aren't going to worry that much about T. Higgins and Boyd beating them. They win because those guys win because there's a concentration on Chase. But Chase, like Tyreek Hill, he does that same thing, you know, of stopping, you know, he makes the catch and he gets turned around really quickly. So he's square to the defender. And then it's like cat and mouse or you know, cobra and mongoose, you know, and Tyreek Hill does. Tyreek Hill shouldn't be the cheetah. He should be the mongoose.
Roadrunner and Coyote.
That's a good nickname. Yeah. The other great
I was going to say Ja'Marr Chase on against the Chiefs. Just that was the game he had 266 yards, whatever. It was a crazy number, right? And three touchdowns, and Burrow was absolutely on fire as well. So that does bode well. But just the point on fearlessness, which I think is maybe the biggest surprise of all, right? With this Bengals side going into these situations, they don't seem fazed at all. At Burrow, McPherson is a rookie kicker, and he just calm as you like takes care of it. How much of that is down, do you think, to a coach who has been, certainly going into this season anyway, significantly maligned? And even for a lot of this season, people saying, well, I don't think he's the right guy. I'm not sure he's the guy to take them forwards. But the culture within the Bengals side, is it, how much can we put down to Zach Taylor? Is it because all these rookies are just generational talent?
It's a good point. And I think in some cases, young coaches are good for young players. There can be a generational kind of divide, which used to be the argument why no one should be coaching after like age 55. I think it was Peter King who said that you know, no, there's never been a good coach over age 55. and then watch
Bill Belichick,
Belichick and Coughlin. In the Super Bowl that year, you know. But that's Peter King. But also, you know, but Taylor takes justifiable heat because Burrow's left. He doesn't have a great offensive line.
You think?
You know, it's not as bad necessarily as it looks, but he leaves Burrow back there alone a lot, and Burrow takes a lot of sacks. And Burrow's already learned to Burrow, basically the Tom Brady kind of thing, where you just, you know, you crawl into a shell and let them hit you. Also, Burrow should now be, you know, he's the donkey of all time. Well, instead of goat, you know, the goat, he's the donkey of all time since he's a Burrow.
Right? Oh,
so anyway, when I worked for UPI, the style book had Burrow in there, you know, Burrow, like part of New York City. And, you know, and it said Burrow, you know, one is an ass and the other is a hole in the ground. And as a journalist, you're expected to know the difference.
But that's the thing. That's what's in 30 Rock, when the one of them's in a movie and they can't understand what she's saying when she says the movie. They're too embarrassed to find out and ask her because it's been going on for months. And it's the rural juror. Do you remember? The rural juror.
Yeah. And Doug Farrar pointed this out. I won't take the credit for it, but Burrow was sacked 9 times and they won 1916. And someone said, you know, has this ever been done before? And Doug somehow dug out 1966 AFL championship game, the Kansas City Chiefs against the Buffalo Bills. Len Dawson was sacked 9 times by the Bills. You want to know who won?
Not the Bills.
No, the Chiefs won 31-7.
Wow.
Can you imagine being sacked 9 times and winning by 24 points?
Wow. I mean,
the mind boggles. I have to find tape of that.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's there.
But, you know, Tennessee had that game. You know, they lost that game because Derrick Henry got stopped 3 times, 3 crucial times, but not Terry. No, one was Tannehill. But Henry got stopped twice on 4th-and-1. The second time really badly because he didn't know where to go.
How did he look to you, Henry?
He looked like a guy who wasn't quite ready to play a lot.
Yeah.
And you noticed it when Devontae Freeman came in. And Freeman, I don't know what his rushing stats were. Dante Foreman.
Yeah, I'll take that, Mike. Yeah.
Yeah. And you noticed it when Dante Foreman came in, and I didn't look up his rushing stats, but in my mind, he ran 4 or 5 times and gained, you know, 8, 12, 7, 15 yards each time. He was hitting the hole more quickly and the holes were there, and Henry wasn't getting to the holes as quickly as he might have, or he probably would have had a couple of really big gains because, you know, he got a couple of 8 or 10 yard runs. But, you know, if he'd been there a little quicker, he's probably through standing up on defensive back. So I think
he averaged 3.1 a carry.
Yeah, Henry. And he looked like he just, you know, he was slow getting started. And I think that's it's not that he's not healthy. It's that he hadn't played. You know, he just needed that game stuff. And, you know, and I think it's a little bit unfair to say that Tannehill, you know, his first pass was intercepted. His first pass in the second half was intercepted. His last pass was intercepted. I think that's a bit unfair to him, but he didn't have a great game, you know, in part because he was constantly in those situations where they had to pass to make things work.
He's copying a lot of criticism today, Tannehill. And Ollie was asking me earlier on, fair question, we were chatting about the games on WhatsApp, and he was saying, what do the Titans do with Tannehill? And it opens up a whole can of worms because, like anything, it's, well, what's the alternative, right? And that was my immediate response.
That's the big part, yeah.
Because he is good enough and solid enough. And
I'm never been a huge Tannehill fan, but I thought they'd worked out in Tennessee the best way, the most effective way to use him. And I'm not sure Todd Dowling would be the guy. I wasn't impressed by the play calling in that whole game for Tennessee. But I think they were around where they should be, even without. They were 6-2 with Henry. They were 6-3 before the playoff game without Henry. So they wound up 6-3 each way. Mm. You know, they beat Indianapolis twice, which sort of changed the tenor of their season because they knew once they'd done that they were in the playoffs. They were probably going to win the division from early on. And then they had 4 games against Houston and Jacksonville, which is a gift to anybody. So I think they wound up about where we think they would be. And if they were going into Kansas City instead of Cincinnati, I don't think, you know, they might be a point. Cincinnati, I think, is 6.5. Mm. I think they might be 4.5, say. Underdogs, but they would definitely be underdogs going into Kansas City as well.
Let's talk Bucks.
One other thing. I think they played really well defensively, and I think that you know Mike Vrabel, if he's coach of the year, which is decided before the playoffs,
yes,
and rightly so. I think he deserves that.
I think he will be. I think he will be, and I agree with you. I think he deserves it. On to Bucks Rams and inevitably all this. It's interesting. It started buzzing in the build up to the game, right? In the week of the game, and more people started talking about it. So by the time the game hit, it was everywhere on social media. The comms were talking about it a lot. And then off the back of it, every other question to Brady is, well, what's happening? Are you retiring? Brady's quote was interesting. I haven't put a lot of thought into it. I'll just take it day by day and we'll see. Interesting, because that seems to be a very different answer to the one he's given in the 55 other years he's been asked the same question.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think there's probably an element of truth in it, unless he signed a deal to do some other kind of thing. Mm. Because his competitive juices are probably stoked by this loss. You know, if they'd lost badly, it might be one thing. But, you know, he and the team played badly for a half, and then they woke up and they came back and showed that they could win, you know. And if they keep a talented team together, he might still want to go out with a shot at another Super Bowl, you know. Mm. And when you look at his legacy, you know, a 14-5 season is not enough to you know, to make you look bad after winning a Super Bowl the previous year. I thought a lot of breaks went against them. I thought the Rams, you know, played really well. I thought they defensively, kind of like the Bills, got caught in those last two plays, you know, in a defense. They shouldn't have blitzed on the second one. I mean, obviously there's a bit of outcome bias in that, but that's kind of the way you play that for safety. You really want to go to the overtime in that situation.
And that's their MO, Mike, as well, right? They've danced with the one that brung you. They've been blitzing the hell out of it all season, right? So that's why they kind of rolled.
Yeah, that's what Bowles does. And if it had forced a turnover, maybe they can kick a field goal and then it's a different story. But Stafford almost turned the game into a Stafford-ish game. you know,
a little bit on him. Akers, obviously, more so.
Akers fumbled twice. Yeah, the bad snap was not necessarily Stafford's fault. We don't know exactly what was said. Although I have to say that the snap came at him faster than any pass Jimmy Garoppolo threw in Green Bay on Saturday.
Stop it.
And
what do they do with Cam Akers, Mike? Because Akers is
I just think you write it off. Yeah, I mean, he missed most of the year with injury. Again, it's the kind of thing of playing yourself back into. I don't think, Cam Akers doesn't have a reputation as a fumbler.
Right.
So, I know Henderson's probably coming back. But in long-term, they went to him. They went to Cam Akers.
They did, before the second fumble. They made the point in the comments, didn't they? They were saying, I love McVay doing that, which is fair play. I love that too. But after the second time, I just wonder if they will be a little cool hand on.
Now, with the lead, that was the time I thought to bring Sony Michel in and maybe work a few more run plays into that kind of thing. They didn't Shanahan it. They didn't, it wasn't 28-3 blowing because you're simply refused to run the ball and give it away that way. It was flukes that gave that away. And probably the luckiest of all time people about Brady will probably have a field day, saying, look at how lucky he is, even though he didn't win. I've used this line already today, but I'll use it again because it's so good. Branch Rickey, the baseball general manager, said, it's a famous quote, luck is the residue of design.
Yes.
And in Brady's case, that's exactly what happens. When it comes, when you make the mistake and give him a chance to get back in the game, by design, he's ready for that. He's prepared for it. The team should be prepared for it. And that's what a lot of those situations, any quarterback who's won more than, one Super Bowl or any big games, you can point to one or two plays in any game that had they gone another way, he would have lost. Or if he lost, he could have won. Brady could easily have won every Super Bowl he's ever in. He could just have easily have lost all but one or two.
It's such a good point.
I think it's because we put all our emphasis on the quarterback, and rightly so, because the quarterback is certainly the part, maybe from goalies in ice hockey, the most important single player in a team sport.
It's funny you use that quote, Mike. That's so surreal. I was driving back from the Sky Sports basketball. It was in Sheffield on Friday night, and I had downloaded the Mike Lombardi Gridiron Genius book, which is about his time with Belichick and Bill Walsh and Al Davis. And the quote was in the Branch Rickey quote, which I had never heard before.
Was it in that?
So it's the second time I've heard it in 48 hours.
That's interesting because, I don't think I listen to Mike sometimes, but I don't think I've heard him use that one.
I love it.
If he used it on air, it would come out. It would kind of come out like, luck is the residue of the residual. Luck is the residual of design.
I know you're a big listener to Edge Rush, Mike, and you know that Propo, Ollie the producer, drops all kinds of vignettes. You'll be delighted to hear regularly misquote Lombardi stuff.
Yeah, what's her name? Malaprop, Mrs. Malaprop.
Mrs. Malaprop.
Ollie, I think that's Al. That was Ollie's grandmother. I liked in the San Francisco game. Obviously, I wrote that Green Bay special teams were a problem. Even though Crosby was coming off a good game, and obviously that was what decided the game. I can't remember who was doing commentary on it. Might have been Ian Eagle.
Yes, it was. That's right. It was Ian Eagle. Yeah.
But they were talking about Debo, and the obvious comparison to Debo in terms of his running is Cordarrelle Patterson, who also became a back in New England and return is one of the best kickoff returners I've ever seen. And the reason is vision. They're both tall. They're both strong. Which isn't what you usually expect from kickoff returners. You expect kind of speed and quickness. But they have great vision. They see holes as they open up, and you see it when Debo's running. He'll be running to the right, and in his peripheral vision, he sees the hole open up to the left, and he cuts back. And it was the same kind of thing, because his kickoff return was the other special teams. Everybody was talking about the blocked field goal, the blocked punt for the touchdown, which was the only touchdown that the Niners got. But Debo set up their field goal with that 45-yard kick return.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and that, and when you see it, it's the same thing as quarterback. He sees those guys, the lanes coming down. He sees where there's going to be an opening, and you know, to me, he was the MVP of that game. You know, quite easily, and I think, you know, going in to play the Rams, as long as they don't have to have Jimmy G passing downfield, as you know, as long as they can run their play action game, and he has kind of like plays that evolve for him to hit receiver A in spot B or receiver C in spot D, and he knows that, I think they can be pretty effective. They've beaten the Rams twice, obviously.
Yeah, why? Why in does fact, Shanahan have his have?
Well, Shanahan's got the juju over Sean McVay.
Yeah, how?
You remember Sean McVay and that pregame with Belichick? You know, oh, Mr. Belichick, so such a pleasure to be playing against you. I'm really
very
honored.
Humble.
And then you realize just as the game went on, he actually felt that, you know, it sort of seemed evident. I get the feeling there's something of that going on with him and Shanahan. Mm. Whereas when, you know, in this game where he's playing LaFleur, you know, and LaFleur was always a step ahead of him with the Shanahan in the Shanahan family tree. Mm. Until Gruden, Jay Gruden brought him in as the offensive coordinator
in Washington.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, he and LaFleur were more evenly balanced. So Shanahan's 6-0 against him, but that's the kind of streak you just think has to
right,
be
logically.
Broken.
Yeah.
But as you saw, the Niners are formidable defensively. Mm. It's going to be an interesting matchup. And I, you know, if Kansas City were to be beaten, it would be because their secondary fails them. Mm. If the Niners are to be beaten, I don't think it's our secondary so much. I mean, obviously, Kopp and Odell Beckham, the way he's playing now, become a difficult combination to beat. But, you know, but I still think that game is more in play. And the early line would seem to suggest that the bookies think the same thing.
We've got to mention before we get into the other final question on the mailbag, props to Robbie Gould, the great Robbie Gould, another clutch performance from a kicker. Did you see the footage of him as the Packers were taking the field, warming up, taking his kicks right by them? Did you see that?
He was taking the kicks and they were introducing the players, weren't they?
Yeah, they introduced the players. He was just... Yeah. Happy as Larry.
Yeah, usually they do that at the end when the other team's not. He could have turned around, I suppose. But he stayed cool. I hate when the announcers say just before he's about to kick. It's almost as bad as the guy calling the timeout on the sidelines after the ball snapped, you know. But they say, you know, he's never missed a playoff kick.
Never missed.
And then, okay, here we go. Now, the other thing about that game, since there's probably, you know, 40% of America that Aaron Rodgers hasn't defended now. and therefore his, you know, his job as host of Jeopardy and all purpose pitch man is probably in jeopardy. But Rodgers threw 27 passes, 21 of them to either to
Devontae Adams
or Aaron Jones. And all the other receivers got six targets between them. 118 catches for 219 yards for those two, and the other guys got two catches for 6 yards. I mean, if you want to point to why Green Bay lost, San Francisco cut off the run game and Aaron Rodgers cut off the pass game.
Well, he's made an interesting quote as well, if we're going down that tip. And actually, was it Alan Chris saying how surreal it is that the top two by far, well, maybe not by far, but the top two candidates for MVP, we don't
might
know if they're coming
back
next season. Yeah, they might not be back. He said, this is Rodgers, lots of decisions to be made. I don't want to be part of a rebuild if I'm going to keep playing. Why would he look at...
You know, there aren't many places he could go where he would not be part of a rebuild. You know, the most obvious one is Denver, who don't really need to rebuild. They're pretty well stocked apart from quarterback.
Yeah.
So
he
was heavily
linked with them, wasn't he?
If that's what he wants. And it might be because before that, they were saying he wanted to go to the West Coast so he could pursue his...
Go back home,
his media career. And his girlfriend lives out there, apparently. Although any guy who can, you know, get dumped by Olivia Munn you know, has some kind of problem.
They're two very different things, though. We need to find out how that went down.
That's true. When last time, you know, I got to get Olivia's number and ask her.
Yeah, we'll get her on the show, Mike. When we do that 2-week trip to to New York for you to hang out with the officials. So you read that, presumably, that I'm definitely leaving Green Bay then. I mean, there's no other way of reading that, right? If I'm going to...
Well, that's what he negotiated for before the season started, you know, and on the one hand... On the one hand, the front office is probably saying, okay, we won't have to deal with that anymore. But on the other hand, he's still a generational talent as a quarterback. Sure. I mean, you know, you can argue that Brady, because he's gone through two decades, you know, but Rodgers has almost matched him. And I think Rodgers, I always say he was Patrick Mahomes before Patrick Mahomes came along, you know, and it's absolutely true. He can lay in passes from any angle, you know, while falling backwards, while on the run, he used to throw cross field all the time, you know, before Mahomes was doing it. No look passes, which is kind of a euphemism because they always do look, you know.
sure.
But, you know, and he's the coolest quarterback around in the sense of not panic.
Unfazable. Yeah.
Yeah. You never see him make panic throws, you know, in the face of pressure. He's the best guy in the business at getting rid of the ball rather than taking a sack, which is part of the reason why he can keep going on at 38. So, you know, I would hate to see him stop playing because he still is at the peak of his game, more or less. You know, Brady statistically is at a peak, you know, not, these aren't his really his best seasons. They've been his biggest seasons in terms of numbers.
Yes.
Because the Bucks throw so much. But, you know, but statistically you would say, yeah, he's as good as ever, you know. Mm. And so, you know, losing the two of them would be kind of strange. And it would sort of shift the balance of quarterbacking over to the AFC for sure. You know, because the good ones there are primarily younger, and the best ones in the NFC are, you know, throw Stafford in the mix. They're primarily older guys.
To be fair though, Mike, thank God we have that next generation that has emerged and is playing at similar levels, because we could have been dealing with 6 or 8 years of Blaine Gabbert. I mean, thank God.
Well, somebody asked, is this the best young crop of quarterbacks to, you know, ever play in the AFC this week?
Oh.
And I said, well, just off the top of my head, you had Manning and Brady and Ben and Rivers entering at about the same, you know, within the space of 4 years, I think. And
the 84 draft as well. You know,
Carson Palmer was around that time. The 84 draft produced
Marino, Elway,
Kelly and Elway, as well as Ken O'Brien, who wasn't a bad quarterback at all, you know.
Ken O'Brien's Carson Palmer kind of-esque, right, in that kind of level.
Yeah, very much. Warren Moon was around at that point, but I think he was older then, and Boomer was around.
Boomer was around.
I mean, it goes in cycles, you know, and it's also a matter of, you know, it's an interesting question. How good would Aaron Rodgers have been had he gone to San Francisco instead of Alex Smith? And how good would Alex Smith have been had he been drafted by the Packers with the 24th pick or something like that? A lot of his situation, you know, and
would he have won more than one ring if he'd gone to the 49ers, do you think?
Interesting question. You know, would the coaching have changed? You know, would they have stayed with the same people because he made them better?
Because he was there,
than Smith did. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, it's all highly speculative, but much of young quarterback is situational. You know, Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert have, to an extent, lifted their teams beyond what they should be capable of.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably more true in Cincinnati than it is even in San Diego.
Yeah.
San Diego always seemed to look better on paper than they play on the field. And,
you know, so. Sure. But yeah, it's so true. Think about a slightly different situation, but again, it's very much about the luck of the draw that Dak bouncing to where he landed, and then injury gives him the break, and then he's suddenly going into a playoff contending team. It's an altogether with a brilliant offensive line behind him, right? I mean,
yeah, and it's probably unfair to say that you sometimes see why he was, you know, dropped to round, was it 3 or 4?
Three, I think you went.
You remember we were doing America Carnage then, and I was saying, Dak Prescott's the third best quarterback in the draft. And I was wrong. He's probably the best quarterback in the draft, as it turned out.
Who was in that draft?
But looking from...
Who did he go with? What year was that? 2016, 15?
It was... Was it Goff? Was that the Goff draft?
I think he went in Goff. 16. Yeah, he went in 16.
I think Goff was the first pick in that draft.
So Goff, Wentz were the top two. Of course, that was the big
and
decision.
Wentz, yeah,
and Goff was a big drop off, right?
And then there was a big drop. He wasn't the third guy taken, but I think he was. I said at the time he was the third best guy in the draft.
Yeah, I'm just going down into Jacoby Brissett. Cody Kessler was taken ahead of him.
Cody Kessler.
Connor Cook was taken ahead of him as well.
Connor Cook, yeah.
Yeah,
Cook was big. Cook was big. They liked him for that. Jacoby Brissett was, oh God, Brissett went to New England.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because Belichick had been told by Bill Parcells, who was like a family friend of the Brissett family, that he was a good kid, you know, and really hard, which he turned out to be.
Yeah.
You know, and in other circumstances, Brissett may have done better.
Wow, I'm just looking at some of the steals in this draft. So Kevin Byard was a third round pick. Yeah. Yannick Ngakoue was a third round pick.
Third round pick. Yeah.
Austin Hooper was a third round pick. God, they got a lot of depth here. Yeah, he went fourth round. 135th overall pick.
Yeah. And so, you know, that was, and Dallas wanted, if I remember correctly, Dallas wanted Paxton Lynch. Lynch go just before Dak?
Paxton Lynch. God, there's a name I thought of for a while. No, he didn't. From what I can see.
Who went? Maybe it was Connor Cook. They wanted some big guy, big thrower. Ahead of Dak.
Yeah, Connor Cook. Well, he went 100. He went in the fourth round as well to the Raiders, 100th overall. It was a big guy, wasn't he? Yeah,
yeah, big, strong guy.
Cook bounced out. That was your backup somewhere. Last seen for the Houston Roughnecks, Connor Cook.
The Houston Roughnecks?
The Houston Roughnecks in the XFL.
In the XFL, yeah. Where was Paxton Lynch? Wasn't in that draft?
No, I can't see him. Hang on. Let me just look him up because where's Paxton? Here we go. He was drafted in the first round.
Yeah,
of that draft. Sorry, yeah. My bad.
Paxton Lynch was the guy who Dallas had their eye on. But then, and maybe Cook was their second choice. Then they saw Dak was still there.
Paxton was a first rounder. My God, I hadn't remembered that at all. Interesting. I love going. Christian Hackenberg, Mike.
Christian Hackenberg.
Hackenberg.
The Jets. He went to
that draft. He went to the Jets. He did. Yes. My God.
Christian Hackenberg.
I am going to spend the next hour going through old.
O'Brien killed that kid when he left Penn State.
Bill O'Brien did?
O'Brien recruited him and was the coach, I think, his freshman year. Hackenberg was like the number one quarterback in the country.
The hot prospect. Oh, it's
yeah. And then he never got any better at Penn State, you know, and had basically couldn't adjust to the speed of the pro game.
Here's one for Ollie, 121st overall pick in that draft, Ollie. Willie Beavers to the Vikings.
Willie Beavers, one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Willie Beavers was tough. He was a tough player.
God, Jordan Howard went in the fifth round. I mean, I win. Tyreek Hill, fifth round of that draw. My God, that's it.
Tyreek Hill went in the fifth round for specific
other reasons. Yeah. We were not going to get into that. Mike, what are you writing about this week in the Patreon column?
Oh, that's a good question. I suppose I will have to mention these four games that were going on. I've got it's about time I started picking my all pro and all rookie teams. So I might get started on that. Although usually that's for Pro Bowl week, since I will find it hard to highlight the Pro Bowl in my column, as exciting as it may be. I heard a promo during one of those games where they said the 88 best players in the NFL will be at the Pro Bowl. I said, huh? Okay, first off, we take away the two Super Bowl teams. Then we take away the guys who don't really want to go there because, you know, whatever the $10,000 or whatever, the free vacation, wherever it is, you know, doesn't appeal to them. Then we take away the guys who were snubbed by the Pro Bowl. So now, you know, are the 88 best players? Oh, I don't know.
88
and then, of
players.
Course, yeah, you realize they're not going to. You know, I wrote about last week We've gone too long. I'm not going to start talking about my last week's column, but
we could, our listeners can check it out instead. patreon.com/MikeCarlsonFMTE. Get involved with that. Subscribe to it. You will not miss a Carlson trick. Brilliant stuff. Brilliant stuff, Carlson. At Carlson Sports, say you follow the big man on Twitter as well. How about we do it same time, same place next week?
Okay. I did write about Pappy Lewis.
Oh, he sounds great, Pappy Lewis.
I can throw this one in. Go on. Next go week. On.
Next week. All right. We'll say join us next week for the Pappy Lewis.
Next week to find out the story about Pappy Lewis.
That'll have him coming back. Brilliant stuff, Carlson. See you next week.
Bye.
Vintage stuff, as ever, from Iron Mike. So much rolling around in my head, as I'm sure your heads as well out there, just trying to put together what we've just seen in the last 24, 48 hours. Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. And we're going again. The conference championships, four teams standing. We are going to be looking into that in more detail later on this week. Pods dropping thick and fast. Edge Rush, I've got to say, Propo and I rolling again with the Drew Lock of the Week. That one is going to the wire. So Edge Rush is dropping our preview show where we'll look in a much more detail at the championship games. Some special guests lined up for that as well. So all of that to come. Wherever you're listening to us, wherever you subscribe to us, it'll drop straight in. If you don't subscribe, if you just come across us for the first time, hello, good to have you with us. Make sure you do and you won't miss a pod. Shout out to all of you who tweeted us, got in touch on Instagram, at the NC Show. Sorry if we didn't get to your question. We will aim to do it next week, next show. So keep coming in, keep coming in thick and fast, and we'll do our best to get down to it. Enjoy, get some kit. We'll see you later in the week. Have a night.
Sports Social Podcast Network.